Welcome back to Sora Financially. Welcome back to the Deutsche Goldmesse. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of the Sora Financial Group. Thanks so much for joining us in Frankfurt. And thanks to Warren Gilman for joining us in Frankfurt. Warren, it's great to host you here. Thanks for making the effort of coming all the way from Hong Kong.
Well, Kai, thank you for the invitation. It's wonderful to be back in Frankfurt. We were talking yesterday. Now, I got to do a sampling of bratwurst just outside the hotel. I'm a huge bratwurst fan. Man, it was good. It was just welcome back to Frankfurt. It was wonderful. Great to be here.
Fantastic. No, really, really appreciate you making the effort. And I get the opportunity to interview a bit about market sentiment, mining sentiment as well. Because you look at a lot of deal flow, I'm assuming.
24/7, that's all I do.
Exactly.
All I do is look at deal flow 7 days a week, constantly.
Absolutely. Perfect. And let's talk about that sentiment a bit in this sector.
It's horrible.
Perfect. Interview over. No, but
sentiment is really, really horrible. But and I don't want to jump in front of your question.
No.
But it is really, really horrible. But I'll put a little caveat on that. It's really horrible in North America. In Australia, the sentiment isn't that bad. Obviously, we're going through a uranium boom, which is great for Queen's Road shareholders, by the way. So that uranium boom is affecting Australian stocks, a whole variety of them. We're going through an iron ore boom, ironically, notwithstanding the situation in China. Iron ore is up 30% year on year. So iron ore driven stocks and all the majors that are Aussie listed, boom times. Lithium prices are down 77%, and yet we've got M&A wars for lithium projects in the multi-billion dollars in Australia, not in Canada, and gold valuations in Australia, since the price of gold in an Aussie dollar context is an absolute record territory. So the Aussie gold stocks aren't doing that badly. So, you know, sentiment is really, really horrible in maybe a North American European context, not so much in Oz.
And let's dive deeper on that matter, actually. Let's discuss that bifurcation a little bit. Like, have you made out a reason why that is? Because it's a currency thing, right?
Absolutely, there's a reason for it. The Aussie pension industry are huge mining investors. We all know that. You look at the share registers of all the big companies in Australia, who's one of the largest shareholder in all of them? Aussie Super. The Aussie pension industry leads the way. The institutions follow. They can't get enough of it. You go to Canada, ask Canada Pension Plan how many mining investments they've made in the last 40 years. Zero. They don't support the industry. The Canadian institutions have been following in those footsteps and looking at other things, doing other things, saying, oh, this mining business, you know, maybe not just that great investment. Of course, they're going to miss the big run. They're going to miss it. And they'll be very jealous of their Australian counterparts. But yeah, I would look right at the very top of the house. I would look at the pension industry to say, supported in Australia, not supported in Canada.
Interesting. Canada has a flow-through tax model, but it doesn't seem to be enough to be, you know, picking up
no.
the slack here.
No. It's a great model, but ultimately what you are doing is selling shares to people who don't want them. They're not mining investors. They're people who are looking for a way to reduce their tax bill. So they want to get the tax write-off and then get rid of the shares very, very quickly. And those shares come back to you. And obviously a lot of the deals we're seeing now are circular deals where you actually place those shares at the same time. And rather than being at huge premiums, they're actually being done at big discounts. And so it's getting to be somewhat dysfunctional now. It used to work a lot better when these were mining investors who also wanted to get the tax benefit. But since, as we've all established, there don't seem to be any mining investors left in North America, it's just people looking for the tax write-off.
Let's try diving a little deeper into the mindset of the Canadian mining industry and the CEOs maybe as well. Because as you said, you're looking at deal flow 24/7. So you must deal with a lot of CEOs and corp development departments 24/7 as well.
I do.
Like, what is the mindset? What is the mindset right now? It's quite depressed, obviously, but in terms of generating deal flow, and we're not seeing a lot of M&A despite the horrible valuations, where M&A should be all over the place. Actually, it should.
Yeah.
We should see a lot more.
Yeah.
What is the mindset right now?
I would say still extraordinarily bullish. Very, very optimistic. People think that we've reached the high in terms of interest rates, that we've reached the low in terms of China's growth, and that it's all about to turn. We're going to have big increases in commodity prices from one end to the other, and there are going to be great times ahead. So I think, generally speaking, the mood is very bullish, notwithstanding the mood of investors.
I was mentioning the lack of M&A. I think one of the themes is, like, well, we're not going to sell at this valuation.
Yeah.
Right? Stocks that traded at a dollar are now at 20 cents, for it, just as an example.
Yes.
And they said, well, we should get a dollar, not 40 cents.
Yes.
Right? Is that something you're hearing as well?
Constantly. I hear it constantly. We'd love to take you over at a 40% premium. Well, a 40% premium only gets us to where we were trading in August. So no, we're not going to sell. We need a 200% premium. Well, we have our own shareholders that we have to worry about, and it would be embarrassing for us to offer a 200% premium for the takeover. So we can't do that. And so you're stuck in this bid-ask war.
Chicken and egg kind of.
Yeah. And so that just eliminates the possibility for M&A for 90% of the cases. And then other M&A, it doesn't make a lot of sense to take two low-quality projects and put them together into one company. That really doesn't solve anything. So, and let's face it, more than 50% of the projects out there you'd put in the low quality category. So, there isn't going to be rampant M&A. You still see deals that make sense. The one last week I thought made imminent sense was Caliber and Marathon.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it.
Yeah, next. That makes perfect sense. And kudos to both teams for putting that deal together. Here you have a company that on Marathon's side has a lovely deposit but was short on cash for finishing the development. And you had Caliber that is in a riskier part of the world but got tons of cash flow. How can we de-risk the company and apply that cash flow to another great ore body? And it's magic, and it'll work out well for them.
Sounds like you're more on the Caliber side, because I've been hearing a lot of negative comments about that deal, especially from retail shareholders that have been in the Marathon, and they're barely breaking even or actually lost money on that transaction because they came in at a higher price. Of course, valuations were depressed, but the same scenario where M&A is like, okay, we shouldn't sell at this price, but
right.
They actually did say yes.
Yeah.
So do you see a 1+1=3 scenario developing?
No question, that's a 1+1=3. People should hold on to those shares because the combination is much better than either company individually. So I would say be patient. That's a great deal. And who knows where the third deal is going to come from. Once that company does that and builds Valentine, they're going to grow that company. So, and I have zero relationship with management. I've never even met them. But as soon as I read that deal, I said, that's smart management.
Interesting, because the commentary is so different online as well.
Interesting.
Okay. It's mostly from the Marathon side.
Yeah.
Like everybody said, well, Caliber got away with it with $375 million valuation Canadian. It was a great deal.
Yeah. No, but on the other hand, Marathon needed the money. And, their financing alternatives, they backed themselves into a bit of a corner.
Let's zoom out a little bit. I want to talk a bit more commodities as well, because I'm curious like what you're looking at. I'm looking at the Queen's Road portfolio. You've got a lot of uranium, obviously. Your two biggest positions are in uranium. You cover base metals with Adriatic. You got a bit of gold in there, copper, Los Andes. What's the hottest industry? What are you looking for right now? Where do you see the most upside?
Well, the great thing about being commodity agnostic is that we can sell things when they're really, really expensive, and we can buy things when no one wants them. We did that when we started off 3 years ago and made our first two investments in the uranium sector, as you know, back when people didn't want anything to do with uranium. And that's worked out extraordinarily well, so well that, as you say, 80% now, 80% of our NAV is uranium simply because of the success of NextGen and ISO, even though it's only two of six investments that we have. And the other investments are largely in copper and precious metals. And copper and precious metals have not done well recently. And so that area is struggling. So guess where we're probably going to make our next investment? I would suggest that when we announce our next investment, which could be next week, it will most likely not be in uranium, even though uranium is reaching new highs every day, and I think it's got very much the wind at its back. But we have enough uranium for now. It'll probably be in copper and gold and base metals.
Interesting. Yeah, well, on the uranium topic, actually, there's not a lot of great developers anyway where you could deploy in, because based on your model, you're looking at convertible debentures. You don't want to give a convertible debenture to a grassroots explorer.
Yep.
Because you need the cash flow at some point.
Yeah, it's got to be a mine. That's what we look for. It doesn't have to have any studies proving that it's a mine. I mean, ISO, we made that investment on the back 3 years ago of 20 drill holes and no resource. The resource didn't come out for 2 years until 2 years after we made our investment. But I knew looking at those 20 drill holes that, oh my God, not only do we have a mine, but we've got one of the world's great high-grade mines. And of course, 2 years later, they announce a resource of 50 million pounds at 50% uranium. As much as we like, the A2 high-grade shear zone at the Aero deposit at NextGen, which is 19-20%, little ISO is over here at 50% uranium. It's mind-bogglingly good stuff. And as I say, we invested in it before, 2 years before there was even a resource statement. So you're right. We look for things. We look for opportunities where there is a mine, but hopefully really, really early stage so that we get in early. And certainly in ISO's case, we had a convertible debenture that's convertible at 88 cents. Well, guess what? The stock is $4 and change today. So it's we've been rewarded for taking on that perspective.
Since you let the cat out of the bag a little bit, I got to follow up on the deal you might announce. I don't want the name.
Mm-hmm.
Regions I'm interested in. Where have you been looking? Where do you feel comfortable deploying capital?
Yeah.
And what stage are we looking at again?
We're geopolitically risk averse. We always like to go reasonably safe countries. That's in the mining context, so you have to take on some risk and go where the ore bodies are. But we won't go to very, very high risk countries. And so we're very, that's criteria number two. Number one is ore body, and number two is jurisdiction. Where is it? And not just country. What county, what state, what province? We need to go what community? The jurisdiction is very, very important. So this next one will be an Americas-based, very low-risk geopolitically, consistent with what we do.
Yeah, fantastic. Interesting. Like, how much powder do you have left, to be honest? Like, you mentioned yesterday in your presentation, I think you have capacity for 10 deals, also to oversee the deals, because you got to manage the positions as well.
Mm.
And I know you're more of a one-man show by yourself. Like, there's a very, based on the GA you mentioned.
Three full-time employees at Queen's Road. So very, very, very,
one of
very
them is
simple.
The CFO, right?
Yes, one's the CFO and one's the president, and then there's myself. And so there's a very efficient, very productive team.
So what I'm trying to get out is, like, are you willing to do more deals more quickly because you see maybe the tide turning in the markets as well?
Yep.
Are you going to jump on some more opportunities because you do have some capacity?
Yeah, we their only limitation right now is capital. We're down to right now $14 million in cash. We are completely debt free. So we'll add some debt to continue to do new investments. And then we're in the process of recycling capital from our initial investments, like we just did with ISO, or sorry, with NextGen. We took our original $15 million convert and parlayed that into the new $70 million convert. And so we'll be recycling and upgrading our existing convert portfolio. So we won't need nearly as much new equity as people might think, simply because we can recycle this money. One of the great benefits of being a convert investor as opposed to a royalty company. Royalty companies, streaming companies, once that cash goes out the door, it's gone. The cash is gone. Guess what? My convert holders, I get to recycle my cash no later than every 5 years. So the money just comes back to me in one form or another, and I get to redeploy it. So it's a lovely model.
Absolutely, yeah. I call you the godfather of risk-free mining investment, right? Because that model is quite unique, but you need to have a certain size to be able to sort of do it.
You do,
well.
And it's great because it's self-selecting great ore bodies. You will only put the burden of a convert, put the burden of paying an interest payment when you don't have any income, onto a project that can sustain it. So you, by virtue of the structure of the investment, you only invest in the best quality deposits. And it's a wonderful constraint. Could this deposit carry a convert for the next 5 to 10 years while you go through the permitting stage? Is the answer yes? It's a great deposit. We should be investing in it anyway. The answer is no. Well, it's not a very good quality project, so we shouldn't be doing it anyway. So it works really well.
Fantastic. Warren, if you were to sit here in May, same seat, where would we be in the market and what would the portfolio look like?
Our portfolio will probably have grown by about another 25%, all at double-digit coupons because interest rates are high, and so we're locking in these higher coupons. And those coupons get locked in for 5 years. So if interest rates start to tail down by the end of next year, guess what? We'll be earning these high coupons for the next 5 years. So it's a great time for Queen's Road to be investing. In terms of where the market will be, I'm probably lean more towards the higher for longer camp, and I think that the market, the U.S. market, has probably gotten a little bit of ahead of itself yet again by anticipating falling interest rates. And so by this time in May, I anticipate that interest rates will very much be the same as where we are now. It's just a question of what's the impact then on sentiment. Will people be frustrated and therefore get bearish and sell off? Or will they be perennially optimistic and think that the fall in rates is just around the corner once again? I think probably the latter. Markets will...
But that's more of a general market sentiment.
That's a general...
Check, right? Exactly. Let's talk mining real quick as well. Let's throw that in the mix because we're running on fumes to a degree, at least at North American companies.
Mm.
Capital is starting to get really tight.
Mm.
A lot of companies are stopping any work.
Yes.
They're just running really, literally on fumes.
Yes.
All right. Do you think that will change? Because the higher for longer narrative, I'm curious what you make of that and how that's going to affect our sector.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to continue and people are going to have to cut programs look after their balance sheets and look after their shareholders. Sometimes the best action you can take as a management team is to do nothing, batten down the hatches, and take care of your shareholders. And if you have to dilute the company by 20% to have a summer drill program, that might not be the best use of funds.
It's an interesting discussion because the sharks have to swim to survive, right? So if they stop swimming, they can't breathe, they die, right? So I'm trying to use that analogy also for the stock market and the mining stocks.
Because
if you don't put out news, people will sell you off, your stock starts to die,
yes,
and you enter that death spiral.
It's a dilemma,
right?
I'm with you. It's a dilemma. It's not easy.
You're more in the camp of, okay, stop work, preserve your cash. We'll see you in 6 months.
I am, simply because I think you're doing your long-standing shareholders a disservice by trying to raise money at ever-declining prices when there isn't any need for it. And why I say there isn't any need for it, because as you and I have seen, Kai, and many of your viewers and listeners have seen, the market always comes back. So feed the ducks when they're quacking, not when they're running away from you. You know, don't flog a dead horse. How many metaphors can I use? If people, I spent many years working for Li Ka-shing, Mr. Li, in Hong Kong. And Mr. Li was always had this philosophy, which I live by to this day. Warren, be the nice guy. Just be the nice guy. If people want your stock, sell it to them. In other words, when there's huge demand, go out there and meet that demand and sell it to them. People don't want your stock, don't sell it to them. Be the nice guy. They don't want it, don't sell it to them. And if you follow that, you will hit nirvana, which in Mr. Li's case was always, he's a master of buying low and selling high. And that also translates as be the nice guy.
Fantastic. Great words to end the conversation on, Warren. Really, really appreciate you coming out again. You got your keynote coming up in about 40 minutes. An hour and 40 minutes. Looking forward to that and to get some more insights on how you structured your risk-free investments. Fantastic. Where can we find more of you, Warren, by the way?
Queens Road Capital website has the presentation, has more than you could ever want to know about Queens Road. All our investments are listed there. It's a very, very simple structure, very, very simple company. And you can buy us on the TSX, so QRC.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. A bit about the mining market, the sentiment, also how to invest risk-free in mining companies. Might not be a model for me because I can't write $20 million checks, I have to admit. And the companies might not give me a 9% coupon. But it's still really, really interesting if you can follow it. But there's a vehicle you can follow to do that as well. So make sure to check that out. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with lots more here from Frankfurt. And if you haven't done so, smash that subscribe button. Thanks so much. We'll be back with more.